old life. Life's been so sweet to me.
Welcome to Unmindfulness. Unmindfulness is a show sponsored by the Shasta Resilience Project and offered to listeners in our area here on KKRN Community Supported Radio out of Round Mountain, Bella Vista, and Redding, California. And today I have the great pleasure of speaking with Susie Stonefield, and we're going to talk about a number of things related to creativity, grieving, creative expression, and related joys and activities. So, Susie, welcome.
Hi, Sharon. Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
So we always start allowing whoever we're speaking with to introduce themselves in whatever way they see fit for grounding us in what we'll be talking about.
Okay. Well, I am a creativity and grief coach. I call it transformational creativity coaching because the purpose is personal transformation. It could be life coaching. It could be thought of as therapeutic coaching. And I work with people in person and online, one-on-one and in small group programs. Most of the work I do is grief-centered in some way, but it's not always just about the loss of a partner or something like that. It often is a way broader topic because grief is woven into so many different places in our lives.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've had Malama McNeil, who you know, on the show, and the folks who know about mind-body medicine here, that will really resonate with them because that model was brought here after the car fire due to community-level trauma. And as you and I were discussing back and forth, there's a lot of things in the environment right now that we might be grieving, even if we don't frame it that way.
Right. And I think even more so, it comes down to the fact that our culture has never given us the tools to grieve properly. And by properly, I mean at all. And so because we come from a culture, we live inside a culture that is pretty much in denial that grief is part of life, we don't embrace it when it arrives. We're afraid of it because it feels heavy, scary, overwhelming. And then the only tools we really have are to move on and deny it, which are not helpful. And so the problem is that grief really is a normal experience. It's something we need to normalize, and we need to learn how to be with it and sort of make peace with it and get comfortable. I even say, like, invite it in and have a cup of tea with it, because it's here to stay. And the more comfortable we can be with it, the more we can go on with our lives in a way that holds it and also doesn't paralyze us.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the griefs that people are bringing to you right now in this moment?
Well, in this county and in the North counties, certainly we have a lot of grief from the different fires that we've sustained and survived and lost so much from. But it's not even just loss. I spoke to someone yesterday who said, I wasn't in the fire, but, you know, the reality is if you live in Chico, it doesn't matter if you didn't lose something because you're so connected to people in Paradise or, Cohasset or wherever the most recent fire has been. And really, it's because we are a community. So we have communal losses in that respect. I have people frequently who come because they've lost a beloved person, like a parent or a child or a partner, friend, or multiple losses. In fact, I would say most of the people I work with are grieving a pile up of losses. And then there's also what's in the atmosphere right now around the political situation in our country, because not only are we in dark times, but it's very divisive. And so there's a lot of feeling of fractured communities, families, after October 7th and the conflict that is going on in the Middle East. I know many, I'm Jewish, and I know many, many families that are very divided over what's going on there. It's incredible the amount of grief. It's like so many different layers. And same with the election here. And so there's so much of that. Then there's the climate crisis that we're inside of and witnessing the power of all the time. But there are a lot of other kinds of grief that people experience. For example, your kids have grown up and left the nest. And suddenly, your identity as a mom or a dad or a parent has to shift because your relationship with your kids is different. Your relationship with your partner, if you have a partner, shifts because suddenly it's just the two of you in the house. And how you relate to each other, how you relate to yourself, how you see yourself, that's a huge loss. How about divorce? A huge grief. Even if you chose it, even if you chose these things or celebrating them, you can celebrate it at the same time that you have grief over this change in your life. I came out of the closet at 56 and I'm 62 now. So it was just 6 years ago. And there was huge grief, even at the same time that it was an exciting, exhilarating moment in my life. I upended my world. I deconstructed my identity. So there was a lot of grief. And then I guess I'll just say the last one that I'll give an example of is I also had one of my kids had very serious medical issues for a large period of his childhood. And so I had grief as a parent of just walking alongside him as he went through that. And it wasn't he's okay. He survived. He's healthy. But as a parent, you don't want your child to go through that. And it's so painful. So you do have a lot of grief around something like that. So grief is so, it's so ubiquitous in our experience. And yet people don't want to talk about it. And oh, then, I would also say our pets, our animals, our children and our family members and best friends. And so I also have clients who come to me grieving the loss of their fur babies as well.
I remember when I did a deep dive into grieving after losing my bonus daughter, one of my bonus daughters. It struck me all of those arenas that I hadn't necessarily thought about. And also, what I see around me too is that the loss of work and whether it's one's identity when one retires or leaving a toxic situation. Like you said, there's celebration and I'm caring for myself, but also a grieving of what you put into
Yeah.
that effort.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a really good thing to point out. Yeah.
So we're going to talk a lot about creativity, but you mentioned that you're a creativity coach and I do equity and resilience coaching. What and there are some listeners who may know very little about coaching, and some are probably coaches themselves. But how do you frame or explain what a creativity coach is and offers?
Well, my favorite thing to say is I make people cry with art supplies, so, which, depending on your
Sign
circle,
me up, Susie.
depending on who you are, that just completely nails it. What I like to say is I'm not a therapist. I was trained in a therapeutic practice, but I'm not a therapist, so I don't call this therapy. It's not definitely not art therapy. But it is self-care with art supplies, self-care with the creative process. It's not about making art, it's about using the art process to feel your feelings. I call it the wordless heart. I always put my hands on my heart when I say that because it's just automatic, because I feel like that's where I hold it. I can be someone who's very much up in my head, all the words, all the, directives and rationalizations of explanations. But there's a part of all of us that is in our energy, in our bodies, that is emotion-based and experience-based. And it doesn't need words. And oftentimes words are useful, but they're not everything. You can express yourself with a color or a picture in, and it gets to the heart of something. And you may not even be able to explain to somebody with words why. You just know when you see it, that's exactly how I'm feeling, or that's how this experience feels. And you can communicate with other people that way too. It's very impactful for people to witness each other's work in this practice, because we resonate with each other. And when we do that, we're connecting, we're being seen and understood. And right now, since especially since the pandemic, but also just since the rise of social media being such a big part of our lives, there's an epidemic of loneliness and isolation in our world. And so doing coaching or doing one of my deep dive programs is an opportunity to be connected to someone through something very essential to you, which is your story and your a deep, true story, not just like surface, everything is fine, but like when you're in a grief program, you're sharing your pain, your vulnerability, your tender heart. And when you can share that in a place that's safe and someone else can receive it without running away, which is, because we're in a culture that doesn't know how to deal with grief, usually the experience we have is some, if you have grief, you learn to not share it with people because they don't know how to hold it for you. And so the work I do with people is I help you learn how to hold it for yourself. And I hold it with you, and I have communities that are able to hold it because I'm teaching everyone how to be comfortable with it.
Yeah, super, super important skill and experience. When I first began thinking about having you on to talk about this, I was reflecting on in the mind-body medicine groups, we have often a beginning exercise where you have some drawings. We also emphasize this is not art, it's not about, it's not a realistic interpretation. And we have three prompts for that. But that part of it's not art and let yourself choose. And it's often challenging for people. And some of that is related to art scars or changes that we go through from the time we were little kids and everything was wonderful and we finger painted and look what I did to adults where we don't want anybody to see what we're trying. And so I'm wondering about your relationship to creative expression throughout your life and how it's changed and what you've thought about what allowed those changes.
Great question. I have been, I think I've thought of myself as an artist my whole life. We have drawings that I did when I was really, really, really little. And I started taking art classes. Bless my mom, she really got me and put me in some really cool classes from the, I think, kindergarten up. And I did learn skills of being a proficient artist in this amazing art school that was like after school programs and things like that. And then I was an artist, an art major at UCLA for my bachelor's degree. And what I remember, like something that was sort of, I think, an essential pivotal moment that I didn't realize was quite so pivotal, was my advisor at UCLA, who was the wonderful artist Sam Amato. I was so stuck. I had some kind of artist block and was really stuck when I was a senior. And he sat me down. He was like, "You are technically proficient, but you need to get mad. You need to get mad at me. I don't care if you get mad at me. I don't care if you get mad at your mother, but you need to get mad and you need to put it on the page." And so he basically instructed me to let go of my very refined practice of, beautiful portraits and very technically accurate, realist kind of drawings and things, and scribble on the page. So I remember as a senior, I taped some paper on my closet door, and I don't know if I turned off the lights, but I just like scribbled and painted and splattered and tried really hard to get in touch with some anger. I was not even close. Like I know that it was another 10 years or 8 years or something till I started to even peel away that layer of the onion. But I definitely blew away all of my peers. They were just like, "What is she doing? What's she doing?" So that was an interesting pivotal moment. Now, years went by. I was an elementary school teacher. I had a family. I raised my kids. At some point in this journey with my son, who had all the medical stuff, I realized that therapy was not scratching it. I had something I needed to get off my heart and chest and mind. I had a lot of anxiety, like perseverating thoughts and racing heart and things like that. And a friend of mine showed me her art journal, and I thought, okay, that looks like something I could do. And an art journal is like a sketchbook, mixed media, paint, drawing, word, some words, but it's not about the finished product. It's just about keeping going at this book and spilling it on the page. So one day I got out a sketchbook, I got out some old art supplies that I happened to have around, and I did one page that just said, "Feel it." And I wrote down every single emotion that I had in me at that moment. It was like 100. And it was the color, it was like the texture and some words. And then every day I kept going back. I was obsessed with this process. It felt so good to let it out and not be worried about, like, I'm making something that matches my couch, or I'm going to show it to people and they are going to praise it or not, or critique it or not. It was really, really private, really personal, and it felt so good. And in that journal, actually, was where I started to let out, like it leaked out, my sexuality questioning. I have a couple pages in that first journal where I was just like, "What is going on?" And I feel so scared about what this is. I couldn't even name it. I just, there were some feelings, but that was the place it started. So that was my journey to the expressive arts, which is very different from where I'd been, which was the fine arts. And even, I also like made jewelry and sewed and all the crafty things and, knitted and all those things. But those were also very product oriented, very soothing. I love knitting. I think knitting is probably one of the most mindful practices you can do, just the repetition and the soft yarn in your lap and the colors. I love it. But the art journal became my place to explore my truth in this thing. And it was so satisfying and still is. That's what I teach people how to
You know, when to say the word creativity,
do.
for some people, that's a very narrow, there's a very narrow range of what falls into that. How do you talk about or define creativity and creative expression to people who are just beginning to explore all this?
Well, I always start with we're all creative. Like my favorite person who walks in the studio is an accountant who just lives in the numbers all day long and comes in and says, "I'm not creative." I'm like, everyone's creative. You just don't know what it is you're doing yet that's creative. And that definition usually comes from a place of, like you were saying, this scar, the wound that someone told you were not artistic. And so you translate that into, I'm not creative, or you think, I don't ever come up with an idea on my own. Well, I don't buy that. I think we do things all day long that are creative acts, whether it's cooking or gardening or coming up with some idea to solve a problem. All of that is creativity. In the work I do, what I generally tell people is that creativity is just expressing from your heart whatever it is through whatever process works for you. It can be through making visual art, it can be through moving, it can be singing, talking, making noise, doodling. It can be a lot of different things. There's definitely no container that could hold all the possibilities. And I also say to people, I invite them to let go of their expectations around it, because basically we come in with expectations based on these wounds or how we've defined our lives or the boxes we've experienced our lives in. So I just invite people, let go of your expectation of who you think you are. Let go of your expectation of who you think you are not. None of it actually matters in this process. Let go of your expectation of what this is. Let go of your expectation of what this is not. Just let it go, because this is no rules. This is getting out of your head and into your heart and onto the page. And that's it. That's all it is.
We've mentioned already some of the challenges that people can face with opening up or opening up again to creative expression. You're mentioning that the press of expectations or thinking that you're not creative. What other things have you found are tripping blocks? I'm not even sure if that's a term, but that people trip over when they're trying to open up.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing is fear. I mean, that's probably the biggest thing, right? Fear of making a fool of yourself, fear of not knowing how to do something. I go back to embrace beginner's mind. It's so hard. I mostly work with adults, so I'm always working with people who struggle with being a beginner, because we are adults and we don't like how that feels. We like to feel proficient and expert in everything we're doing. And I know that we all have things where we feel that way. So because I'm not teaching an art class, I'm not teaching people a skill of how to do art and how to make something pretty. I'm really saying, use these art supplies however you sort of would like and feel your feelings. So there's fear around that, like around the art supplies, but there's fear around feeling your feelings too. And so I like to teach people to embrace the unknown. Like, you don't know what you're going to find when you do this practice. You don't know what's in there. What if you like how it feels? What if you learn something about yourself? What if you feel lighter at the end of this process? Like, that's a kind of embracing. I also talk to people about giving themselves permission. Like, give yourself permission to be a beginner, to feel what you're feeling, to feel afraid, to feel uncomfortable, to feel resistance. My favorite thing is when someone says something like, I don't know, I'm really feeling like I don't want to do this topic. And I'll say, great, either go towards that. Like, why are you feeling like you don't want to do that? Or what do you want? Like, do check in. What is it that you do want to express right now? So I always love looking at it from like a variety of angles, but giving yourself permission is a radical act. If you look up the definition of permission, in it is an external force that can, an authority that can give you that permission and grant it to you. So if we take that for ourselves, we give ourselves the authority to give ourselves permission, we're doing a radical thing. And so I talk to my people about giving yourself permission every time you notice that you're holding yourself back from something. Oh, you can't, there's a voice in your head. Oh, you can't do that. I mean, we all have an inner critic. It's always loud. And I like to say, tell your inner critic to go play outside and you can talk to it later. But the inner critic is going to keep saying things like, you can't do that. You don't know how to do that. You don't have the right to do that. You shouldn't trust that. You shouldn't trust yourself, So you have the self power. You have the authority to say to that voice, I don't know if I want to hear what you have to say. Or maybe you could just say maybe and let tell the voice to go away for a while, or we'll see, or I think I do want to try this. And it feels amazing when you give yourself permission and then you do this thing that you had fear around or resistance around, and in the end you feel bigger, lighter, able to move on, It's incredible to witness it. I love my work.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to On Mindfulness on KKRN, and I'm speaking with Susie Stonefield, who loves her work and is a creativity and grief coach. And we're talking about both of those things. So, Susie, how do you talk to people, and maybe you don't, about the connection between creative expression and healing? And healing is one of those longer processes that we like to truncate too. Like, I take the pill, I take the course, and I'm done, and I don't want to feel anything, irritating on the way, and you're explaining, well, sometimes things come up and that's why you're resistant to them, but that's part of the process. How do you talk to people about that, invite them into that?
Well, first of all, I want to just say that the word healing is overused in like the self-help industry,
It is.
as if we heal and then we move on, and never go back to that place. So, first of all, if you get a wound on your body, then you have a scar. Usually, it shows to some degree, sometimes more, sometimes less. You always can look at that scar and remember what caused it, what happened, what your story is. My guiding philosophy for my work, it comes from the Japanese practice called kintsugi. And it is a practice in which it's ancient, but it's in which they heal, or they heal, they mend broken pottery with gold lacquer. So they glue the pieces back together, and the glue has gold in it. And so you see the cracks. And when the piece is finally done again, it's different. It's not the same piece it was. It has these gold lines all through it that show the fractures. And it's beautiful. It's such a beautiful piece. It's unique. And the philosophy behind it is more beautiful for these cracks, for its imperfections, rather than this perfect, pristine vase. It's now something that shows something happened, and it's now healed and together again, and beautiful, and maybe stronger, I don't know. So anyway, I love that. I love that metaphor. It also relates to, like, Rumi's quote, "The wound is the place where the light enters you." So it talks about your divinity is in the places where you are broken, where you had pain and you healed, or where you still have pain, maybe where you're still open. So I actually have on the wall, the back wall of my studio, I painted gold cracks on the wall, and I painted that quote from Rumi, because it really is the philosophy behind my work. Like, healing is not about, we're all good, move on and don't look back. Healing is about embracing your story, your journey, your scars, understanding, expressing, sharing, being known, being seen, and then holding all that, being stronger and more truthful, more authentic as you go forward. And so that's the work I do with grief and with all sorts of other, things that people are struggling with or dealing with that they come to me to work on in their creative practice.
We've had a lot of, or seen a lot of attention to some of the newer work on neuroaesthetics. And to be honest, I don't know how long it's been in other forms, but there was that book that got a lot of attention, Your Brain on Art. That's a wonderful book, and it goes through a lot of the science behind what we're activating when we're creative. And there were things in that, like when, for many people, doodling can actually help you be more attentive to what's happening. But the flip side that I've been interested in for this show and the mind body medicine work is how we can engage in an active mindfulness process where we can let those thoughts go rather than necessarily attending to something else. And so I wonder what you think about the connection between creative expression and mindfulness, how you've used it, or how you invite others to engage in mindfulness through art or creative expression.
Well, in my process with my clients, I usually start by saying this, what I said earlier, which is get out of your head into your heart and onto the page. So we start with a mindfulness practice of grounding, a grounding meditation. And sometimes it's more of a guided meditation, but the point of it really is to get into your body before you start this, rather than to be up in your head. I personally find art journaling, intuitive art making, I should say, to be incredibly mindful, because it gets me very much out of my thoughts and just into whatever it is I'm doing. Like, my focus, it's possible. My brain can be thinking about, as we do when we're meditating, it can be thinking about a lot of different things, but it's a very calming experience to be doing something that is kinesthetic. So my hands in the paint, ripping paper, painting, gluing, touching, it's very tactile. So I find that that's very, very calming and gets me into a very mindful state. I really think it's individual. I think it's personal, what works for you. So, for example, for some people, like coloring books are really, really helpful for them to get into that sort of state. You could call it a flow state. It also could be just like a state of calm, a state of being relaxed, a state of getting out of those, the spinning thoughts. I personally find coloring books to be really frustrating. I don't find them satisfying at all.
Me
There's
too.
also something called Zen doodling and Zen tangles. I find those to be incredibly aggravating. They do not work for me. They're very, very, like if you look at examples online or in a book or something, you can get very caught up in perfectionism and it's not at all calming. For me, that kind of repetitive doodling, it does not work at all. I want to finger paint. I want to get a big paintbrush. I want to scribble. I love scribbling. Like my warm up that helps me get into my body more and out of my head is scribbling with a soft lead pencil all over the page, like just a massive tangle of scribble. And then maybe some paint or some watercolor crayons and a little water and mush it around, like really get out of this is going to be beautiful when I'm done with it. Because if it has to be beautiful, I'm not relaxed.
And I'll put it in the art show.
Exactly. I'll submit it to some publication. No, that doesn't work. So I do think it's really personal for some people. A Zen tangle is a great way to decompress.
There's something that you said that struck me, and perhaps because I recently finished Life in Five Senses by Gretchen Rubin. She kind of goes over some of the science and experience of opening to those. But it struck me that when you're hands-on and tactile, there's, maybe not, you're not tasting so much, but it's visual, it's tactile, there's smells involved, textures. And how do you think that engaging all of the senses like that figures into the process of getting out of your head or maybe challenging the inner critic or quieting the inner critic?
I think that the more that your senses are engaged, the more you're out of that just constant thinking mind, which is just one part of our experience. So if you're engaging with smells and tactile and taste or I don't know, visual and sound, some people love quiet, some people love music, all of it can stimulate you in different ways. I think when you're doing that, you're able to disengage from what can be a really intrusive brain pattern of thoughts and worries and a list and all the things you have to get done. I wanted to say that another way to look at this that's important to me in my work is I call it modalities of expression. So it's not really technically like senses, but there are various creative modalities that you can engage in to do this kind of work, expressive arts work. And the more modalities you use, sort of in concert or chronologically, the deeper you can go into your self-awareness, your self-discovery, and your insights. So, for example, if I am art journaling and I'm painting on the page and I'm doing collage and I'm staying with color and imagery, My mind might be circling around some story that I'm expressing on the page, or I might just be exploring that through these images and colors. If I then bring words in, so then I get a pen or a pencil and I start to journal just to pour the words on the page without, it's not about making a poem or something pithy quote that I'm going to share on Instagram or something. It's just about spilling it. I often will get to some self-awareness I had no idea was there. It's like a door opens that wasn't opening with that other modality, which was visual. Now I'm using verbal. It's a whole other part of my experience and my brain. And so these words come out, and suddenly, for example, suddenly I have self-compassion, or I have compassion for somebody else who I'm doing this whole page about, you know, or I have an awareness about them. I've had many, many times experiences with doing a page about a relationship that I'm in and struggling, struggling, struggling. And that's what sort of the color and the images all were. And then I start journaling, and boom, something flips, something moves a little bit, and I'm able to understand that person in a different way. So, Natalie Rogers, who's the founder of the program that I was trained in, the person-centered expressive arts therapy approach, she said that the more you do, the more modalities you use in concert like that, the deeper you go in your awareness. And so I teach people how to use movement as well as writing, as well as visual, music, sound. I try to teach a lot of different modalities as a way for them to access the self-awareness and the insights.
You mentioned words, and it doesn't have to be poetry. I'm very involved with the poetry group here. I've also found that for me, and Julia Cameron years ago talked about this in The Artist Way. It's easier to do something where I don't have expectations about how, like words, I have expectations, but painting, I don't know anything. But I'm wondering what, well, two things. I'm wondering two things. One, when you say journaling, because I know there are lots of different ways that people journal or putting words on the page, what can that look like? What are some of the possibilities of that?
I love that question. So one thing I teach people how to do is something I call obscured journaling. It's writing, like just write, and then turn the book about 45 degrees, write over that, turn it again, write over that. So you're doing two things. You're just doing this sort of unself-conscious, uninhibited spilling of your thoughts onto the page, and you're letting it go. You cannot feel precious about it because you can't read it. You're literally obscuring it as soon as you're writing it. I also have cultivated and teach people how to cultivate a very messy handwriting to use in your journal, with the, very loopy or jagged, and squish the lines together. So it's really hard to read, because the purpose of it, at least the way I'm teaching it, the purpose of it is to just release it. It's cathartic. Like, spill it on the page and then let it go, move on. When we are like very concerned about how nice our handwriting looks, and I cannot tell you how many people are self-conscious about their handwriting. It's an interesting thing. I've never really thought too long about it, but it just occurs to me right now how many people are hesitant to write in their journals because they don't like their handwriting. So that's definitely something to let go of, right?
That
So
is interesting.
when we write, as it's like Anne Lamott calls it, a shitty first draft, and Natalie Goldberg would say, just write it down. All of my favorite writing
Yeah,
inspirations.
me too.
It's a because it's a process, it's a practice of just putting it down, just doing it, and not having to hang on to it. I guess what I really want to say right now is it's about the preciousness. When you're feeling precious about what you're doing, you're afraid to ruin it. So you stop yourself. You sort of abort the process because it's you're afraid you're going to lose this thing that's so precious. So there's a few ways to deal with that. One is, like I described, like just do your journaling and obscure it and get into that practice of just, I'm not holding on to it. Another is, okay, if you journaled something and you realize I want to hang on to it in some way, take a picture of it and move on, then cover it up. Another would be walk away from it or turn the page, do something else, let it sit for a while. Usually, a little bit of time, that page feels a lot less precious to you and you realize you can keep working on it. And I think that it's something you have to practice doing. You have to get used to how it feels. And when you're someone who doesn't have a lot of experience with the creative process, it takes some learning to get to that point because everything feels like special. And, I want to say, I not only do I call myself the person who makes you cry with art supplies, but I'm also like the anti paint and sip lady, like a class where you have to have alcohol to sort of get comfortable, and then everyone uses a recipe to make the exact same painting. That is the absolute polar opposite to what happens with me in my classes. Because, first of all, we're not numbing. Second of all, it's so individual. And I don't want you ever to feel like what you're making has to look like some particular thing. You don't know what you're going to write, and you don't know what images are going to come through. And I want people to learn to be very open to what shows up.
If you're just joining us, you're tuned into KKRN, listening to On Mindfulness. So when I heard you, Susie, talk about journaling, I thought about people who can do the messy handwriting. I'm way ahead on that. My handwriting is illegible even to me, but can do what they normally do, or random thought, like gaining that freedom, which is beautiful. And I also thought in this past year, I was involved in a Creative Core grant and offered a lot of poetry play workshops. And it was a reminder for me in other things that I've done that some people are like, sure, let's do whatever. Here's the nudge, here's the invitation. And other people still carry themselves so tightly that it takes a while to open up to play and all of the things that you mentioned, not having to be precious, not worrying about the outcome or the product, being messy, trying something new. What are your invitations or skills that you suggest for people who are very structured and very tied to the step by step that are more on the, paint and sip than the play with these finger paints kind of thing.
Well, I have prompts or invitations that I give to people, which would be setting a stage for them to explore a story, a concept, a topic. That's one thing. Giving people prompts is a way that I often will start with someone who's that insecure about, with just, it feels too open and too unknown to just start. But the other thing that I really like to do is show people how to begin a page in a really, really easy way. Because starting is often the hardest moment because of all the fear. Like that blank page is very intimidating. And so one of my favorite things to do is with a little acrylic paint, like you can get the really cheap acrylic paint at the art supply store, and an old credit card or an old gift card or hotel card key, you know. And you put a couple drops of paint, you don't need a lot, a couple drops of paint on the page, and you take that credit card and across the page, and you get another color and do it again. And it's super pretty. And then you started. The page has some stuff on it, you know? And so then you can go to like, go to get some collage images, go to a magazine and just see what like an image that it calls your attention that you like, or is saying, I usually say it's waving at you, like, use me, use me. And cut it out or tear it out, get a glue stick, glue it on the page. And when I glue something on the page, I like hold it on the page till I know the spot. I feel it. So I'm checking in with my body for the energy. My hands often are the ones are the place that knows, you know. Ooh, I don't know if it just has a feeling. So that's something else, like just starting really basic with the materials or the process to get yourself in the door and then see what happens. But also, I talk to my people about like there are three main ways to start a page. And one of them is with this blank page, and you have no idea what you want to do. And so you come to it, you're feeling open. But if that is not comfortable for you, because that feels like too wide of a field, then start with the seed of an idea. And the seed of an idea would be a piece of poetry, a quote that you love, or a color. Just start with color, or a relationship, you know, your marriage. That's a great place to start, I promise.
A lot of material there.
And or something that just happened, you know, in the world that's affecting you, or an emotion. There's so many different seeds of an idea. But what you do is this thing you have, you hold it in you when you approach the page and you let it guide you. You don't have to have a picture in your mind, but you know you're holding the feeling of, I want to explore this thing and I want to do it with art supplies on this page. So whatever then calls to you, catches your attention, the colors, the images, maybe you have some words you want to say on the page. That's you let it guide you. The third way to approach a page would be with a picture in your mind of what you want to create. And that is the hardest way to do it. Like that is hard for an artist who knows how to paint and draw with expertise. It's so hard because what you're envisioning is perfect. And you're not going to be able to do it. And so you have to be gentle with yourself. Let some of that go, like allow it to shift and change a little bit. But my recommendation would be either start with just some paint on the page or start with the seed of an idea and let it guide you where you go.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great invitation. Often on this show, we ask the people we're speaking in conversation with to offer a practice, and it could be like the guided visualization that you mentioned, or some other activity as a resource for people who are thinking they want to be in a kind of mindful space. Do you have something that we could do on the air? That'd be great.
Sure. Yeah. So it will take more time than just, you know, a couple minutes. So what I would recommend is either write the steps down and then take some time to do it, or if you're listening to this in a recording, then pause it and do take as long as you want and then start it again. But here are the three things. So start. And you don't, let me just back up and say, you don't need a lot of art supplies, okay? A piece of paper and something to write with and something that has color. So crayons or markers or pastels, or if you have paint and you want to use that, great. So start by making a mark on the page that represents yourself. It can be a dot. It can be a little drawing of yourself. I definitely recommend not getting caught up in it being a self-portrait. It can be a self-portrait just being actually a fingerprint on the page, or a dot, a scribble. Once you feel satisfied with that, I invite you to feel how you're feeling. Like just sit and check in with your body, check in with your heart. Notice how you're feeling. Notice, is your heart pounding? Is there something tight? Are you feeling some discomfort? Are you feeling fear? Are you feeling sad? Just notice it. And now go to your colored art supplies. So your pastels or pens or whatever you have. And whatever colors are waving their hands at you and saying, use me, trust them and use them. You don't have to second guess it and you don't have to define it. Just use whatever colors and make marks on the page that express your feelings. It doesn't have to be representational. In fact, it can just be swaths of color or scribbles of color, circles or whatever. So, anyway, take some time to do that. When you feel complete, use a pen or a pencil or a crayon and write some words. What are some words that are going to help you express these feelings? It could be a lot of words, it could be one word. And if words don't feel right, then don't use them. It's always just an invitation, which you can reject. And when you're done, step back from it and take a look at it and check in and see how you're feeling. And if you have more to do, do another one.
That sounds great. I'm definitely going to do that this weekend. Well, Susie, thank you so much. And if you're driving and listening to this, it's Susie Stonefield. You can look for her, and we'll have everything that she mentioned on the show notes. And you can find those on kkrn.org and search for On Mindfulness, this show. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for supporting this station.
Realizing life's not always hard, I'm recognizing my part, and I'm listening to my heart. I'm listening to my heart.
Our theme music is provided by Rachel Beck, also known as Omnificent. You can find her work on Spotify, YouTube, and a number of other platforms. We're so grateful for her music.
I'm listening to my